Hello and welcome to the Health Ranger Report on Brighteon.tv. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and today we're continuing now with part 5 of this new presentation slash audiobook called Resilient Prepping. And today, in fact, we're going to cover the mass migration of survivors out of the cities as the collapse accelerates. Remember, this is a global depopulation collapse. It's going to involve a financial collapse, a food supply collapse, really the collapse of the basic infrastructure that people need to survive. There's a lot that's coming. And as a result, many of these cities, especially West Coast cities, will not be livable. And people will escape those cities. And so today we're going to talk about those details, what it means based on where you live, and how to survive all of this. We'll be here with that information and much more right after this short break. Stay with me. Mike Adams here, Brighteon.tv. Okay, welcome back. Mike Adams here. Section 5 of Resilient Prepping. Don't forget the full audiobook will be available, downloadable from resilientprepping.com in a few weeks once that's all ready with the transcription and all of it. So here we're going to be talking about the mass migration out of the cities. Now, what's crucial to begin with here is understanding that the cities are death traps. They are not sustainable. And right now we have drought affecting West Coast cities, including San Francisco, San Diego, Los Angeles, but also really Portland and even Seattle and many other cities along the West Coast. So water supplies are not available as they were before, but with the financial collapse and then the lawlessness and the chaos that is unleashed by left-wing policies of defunding the police and abandoning the rule of law and so on, people are going to be fleeing not just those cities, but those states in record numbers. So from the West Coast, we're going to see people fleeing from Washington, you know, to Idaho. We're going to see people fleeing Oregon and California. They're going to head into Nevada and Arizona and then Utah and so on. And some of them are going to make it to Colorado, and some to New Mexico, and some to Texas, and some to, you know, Montana. So, or Wyoming as well. So we've got to understand there is a mass migration coming, and these people are going to be rather desperate. Some of them, you know, at some point they're going to be starving to death, and you know, I support efforts to help local churches feed the starving and provide emergency medical assistance as is necessary. But there's also a dark side to this, which is that some of these groups are going to be, you know, looters. Some of them are going to be armed. Some of them are going to be breaking into people's homes out of desperation. There's going to be some people will try to survive homeless in a lawless, collapsed city, you know, like San Francisco. But a lot of people will try to escape, and some will live, many will die. But you got to understand that because this collapse of human civilization that's being engineered is so complete, that the entire construct of a city, the way that we have known it for our entire lives, as an artificial construct with all these artificial inputs, that is going to be history. From now on, I mean, after this collapse forward, we're only going to be able to live in sustainable regions where you can produce food and you have enough water locally and you can produce electricity and have a local power grid, and you can have local commerce because you have the rule of law, local currencies, all of these things. We're going to see that sprouting up in areas around the world. But cities are not survivable because they're artificial. A city has all these inputs, as you know, electricity, food has to be brought in. They can't grow the food in the city. They can't produce the electricity in the city. They can't produce the water in the city. So all of this has to be brought in, including fuel, you know, gasoline and diesel and so on, and telecommunications infrastructure as well. And then as a result, cities have a strong dependence on all of these external inputs. And then they also have required outputs, things that they push out, such as sewage and pollution and the exporting of manufacturing and so on. So cities cannot survive very long without these artificial inputs, and the inputs will stop when the banking system craters. And so then it's just going to be absolute chaos for a while in these cities until there's a mass die-off, probably from violence and looting and starvation and disease. And anybody who survives that will not want to be there very long because there are going to be dead bodies everywhere, including from COVID and the COVID vaccines, because they're all spike protein weapons, and they're killing people with these bioweapons. Who wants to hang around in a city where there's dead spike protein bodies around every corner? Now, that's not a very pleasant experience. So the other thing is that very harsh climates are going to really kick in when you've lost financial transactions and you've lost the power grid, even temporarily. Then suddenly the local climate really matters because you don't have air conditioning and heating. And you don't have, you know, the ability to control your indoor environment. Suddenly, a typical house that's built out of 2x4s and drywall and insulation, it turns into a mold oven very quickly. In Texas, it would. In Arizona and Southern California, it would be drier, but it would still be extremely hot, basically unlivable. It would be cooler to live outside the house than to try to live inside a house where there's no air conditioning. And then in the northern states, especially the Northeast, and then, of course, in Canada, you're going to have a very harsh winter when these outages kick in. And although there may be local areas that have electricity and that have, you know, heating oil and so on, there are going to be other areas that don't. And those areas, living in homes will be very, very difficult. Although it's still a form of shelter, you will need to stay warm with other sources of heat or insulation inside those homes. We're also going to see mass migration out of areas that have no water for irrigation or farming. Now, right now, a lot of the water irrigation that happens along the West Coast in the United States is fossil water that's running out. And without electricity, of course, you can't pump up the water. So there aren't that many areas that have very good surface water. Now, I know that Klamath Lake in Oregon provides surface water canals to some farmers in those areas in southern Oregon and northern California to some extent. I know that Wyoming, and the northwest part of Wyoming, there's a system of canals there near Cody, near the Yellowstone Park. And in fact, the Mormons, who really settled a lot of that area, built a lot of surface water irrigation canals that can function. And similar canals exist in other states such as Washington and Idaho and Montana and so on. But that's going to be the key, is really having surface water access to be able to divert streams or rivers or surface water runoff into irrigation projects without requiring electricity or complex parts that power pumps. So where you can't grow food, eventually you have to flee. And that's one more reason why people are going to flee a lot of California and even parts of Arizona as well, and certain parts of Nevada. Now, let's see. RVs. There are going to be a lot of vehicles that people will use to try to flee at first. But since fuel will collapse in terms of just supply, this won't last very long. So if you have an RV, if you have some kind of vehicle, you plan to bug out in that vehicle, you need a fuel supply with you. And this is why I'm an advocate of diesel engines, because diesel is much safer to store and it stores for a much longer period of time. So ideally you would have an RV with a diesel engine and then perhaps a small trailer behind the RV, and you could tow several 55 gallon drums full of diesel. And as long as they're not in an enclosed space, it's just diesel, you know, it doesn't combust very easily, you could carry, you know, even 1,000 gallons of diesel with you. But you might be a target, you know, for looters and also road checkpoints and rogue elements in society. So have a bug out plan that either you can do in advance or that does not require you to drive down the road in an RV with 1,000 gallons of diesel fuel that makes you an obvious target. Remember, a lot of people are going to be super desperate during these times and during these evacuations. And you don't want to be stuck on the road with a bunch of crazy people. You know, former Democrats who now realize that their cities have collapsed, you know, they're going to be pretty insane. Everybody needs to have a backup tent. And the best tent to get is a canvas tent with ripstop material. Now, I've researched tents quite extensively. Most of the so-called lightweight camping tents are total crap, and they won't last long. If you want a tent that you can live in semi-permanently, it needs to be a canvas tent. And there are only a few companies. I think there are three companies in North America that make canvas tents. There's one in Australia known as Diamantina. I don't know what the name means, but that's in Australia. There are just a few companies to look at. Their tents are very difficult to get, even right now. They're in short supply, but if you want to live in a tent as a backup plan, and my grandparents did during the Great Depression, by the way, you'll want a canvas tent. Now, they're very heavy. They're not portable on your back. They can weigh 100 pounds or more, but as a semi-permanent place to live, it's much better than sweltering inside a home without air conditioning. You might be able to live on a tent on your back porch, for example, and actually make that work as a backup plan. So I say you should have tarps and canvas material and cordage, because you may need to pitch a tent even as part of your exodus if you're leaving some of these cities, or you may need to live in a tent temporarily as you're migrating or getting situated. Now, homes that are made out of concrete or stone or brick are going to do very well relative to everything else, because these kinds of homes tend to hold a more moderate temperature and humidity levels, and homes that are built into the earth, either an underground home, an earth-burned home, or even an actual livable cave is going to be ideal. Maybe people can join the Taliban, move to the caves, and get free military gear handed out by the Biden regime. Who knows? But if you happen to be wealthy enough to have your own private cave or your own, you know, missile silo bunker or whatever, you're in a pretty good position for what's coming. Now, for those of you who are in areas that are desirable, you're going to be receiving a flood of survivors and, you know, refugees from these other liberal cities that are collapsing. So I'm just thinking, you know, those of you who live in like Northern California, you're going to get a mass exodus of people out of Sacramento and San Francisco and so on. Those of you who live in Eastern Oregon and Eastern Washington and Idaho, you're going to get just a surge of people fleeing the collapsing cities of Seattle and Portland and so on. And much the same is true in even in Texas. So, you know, I live in Central Texas. We're going to see a mass exodus out of Austin probably at some point. And those of you on the East Coast, if you're in New Jersey or New York or Connecticut or Massachusetts, you know, the population density is very high there. Not a lot of rural areas left, except up north in Maine and Vermont and so on. But for the rest of you, you're going to see people trying to push west to get to other states where there's less population density. So if you happen to be in one of these many red states, you know, maybe you're in Pennsylvania, maybe you're in even Ohio, or you're in the Midwest, perhaps, you know, Kansas, Missouri, Iowa, Oklahoma, what have you, or the southern states, you know, like Tennessee and North Carolina and so on. You should prepare with your local law enforcement as this collapse takes place. You should prepare to deal with a massive influx of migrants who are going to be desperate, lawless, starving, diseased. They're going to have medical needs and food needs. Now, unfortunately, this is happening at the same time that you yourself and your community are suffering from starvation and shortages and banking collapse and all these things happening at the same time. So it's going to be a very difficult time to have excess supplies to aid those who are refugees coming into your town. But at the same time, you can't let them just pillage the town, right? You can't just let them die. So what do you do? I don't have the answers right here. That's not what this is about. But the answer is going to be very difficult. It's going to be a triage situation. Those who are very sick or very injured, wounded, what have you, are probably going to be left to die. Those who break the law, who attempt to loot, will probably be shot on sight. Those who can contribute to a community by offering badly needed services, such as repair, for example, or people who have medical skills, people who have, you know, skills on how to farm, or skills of how to add to security and so on, how to repair the electrical grid. These kinds of people will be embraced by a lot of communities. So I can see it's going to be a situation where there are a lot of questions. You know, you're going to have to, if you're a refugee, you're going to have to qualify to stay in a town and become part of that community. You're going to have to bring real-world skills, and not the kind of BS nonsense skills that are being taught in the left-wing universities, like, you know, victimhood and cry bully tactics and Black Lives Matter, you know, propaganda and wokeism and transgenderism and all that stuff. Those are not practical skills. They don't apply to real-world survival scenarios. So those people, you know, women's studies or what have you, they're going to have a hard time because they don't know anything about the real world. They don't know how to change a tire. So what good are they in a collapse scenario? That's going to be the argument from a lot of these townspeople. There may be towns where certain refugees are allowed to transit the town and move on to the next town. So that will require security to accompany the refugees and push them on through the town and make sure they don't escape and then end up looting the town. So you're going to see a lot of that as well. And then they're going to be pushed on to the next town. And then you're going to see a lot of these towns trying to get together and form some kind of mutual defense agreement and mutual policies for how to deal with all these refugees, especially given that a lot of the refugees will be dying from spike protein injections because they came from liberal cities where people signed up to take, you know, the bioweapons shots. So what do you do with a bunch of refugees who are committing vaccine suicide, and then they want to come into your town and shed spike protein all over everybody and make your people sick? What do you do with those people? Well, there's going to be a lot of decision makers, you know, deciding that. And some of those decisions are going to be rather harsh, I predict. So that's coming as well. Now, in addition to that, you're going to have family moving in with each other. So a lot of people that might be, you know, sons or daughters might try to move in with their parents and start consolidating families. And for larger families, this is actually a very effective thing in terms of a deliberate, conscious migration to come together into a strong family unit so that you can have specialization and sharing the load of surviving in a collapse scenario, because you need about 10 people to make it work. You need some people focused on food. You need some people focused on security and perimeter defense, observation, patrols. You need other people who are specialists in repairing clothing, repairing bicycle tires, shoes, what have you. And you're going to need experts, seed saving, handling animals and dogs and things like that. So, and then you're probably going to have some injured people in your family because they took the spike protein injection. Or you may have elderly people who have special needs. So really think about 10 people. How can you gather 10 people to come together, maybe not in one house, but in, you know, tightly close homes right next to each other, perhaps on a cul-de-sac or something, or maybe you have a ranch and you can get people together there. And it's so important to have that critical mass of about 10 people living together that personally, I would rather live in a tent together with a group of people who can offer mutual defense. I would rather do that than try to live in a home by myself where you're subject to looting and you're subject to home invasion when you're sleeping because you can't watch out 24/7 because you're by yourself or you're just one or two people. So again, I'd rather live in a tent as long as I have some mutual defense. In any case, understand that a lot of the people who try to migrate out of these cities are not going to survive. There's going to be a very high fatality rate, especially individuals who attempt to walk out, you know, across the deserts of California, who really have no survival skills or even navigation skills whatsoever. It's almost impossible to carry enough water with you, you know, to make that journey on foot. You would almost have to have a camel or, you know, a bicycle or a motorcycle or something that would help you carry enough water just to make it through. And then you're likely to be targeted by bandits and roadblocks and you know, who knows what else. So anybody who does make it out of those areas is actually going to be probably a very able-bodied person who is very resourceful. And if they make it through all of that and then they come to your town in, let's say, northern Arizona or areas of Utah, excuse me, what have you, you may want to consider bringing them on, because if they survive that, they're pretty good survivors. They can probably add some things to your town and help you stay safe against others. Okay, the other thing is that if you are bugging out, then you have planned poorly. Anyone bugging out has made a huge mistake. When all of this goes down, you don't want to be bugging out anywhere. You want to be off the roads, off the highways. You don't want to be on foot, crossing farms, none of that. You want to be hunkered down with your group, with your supplies, with your caching, you know, your hidden supplies, which I'll talk about in another chapter. You want to have your, you know, your night vision, your nighttime patrols, your firearms, your ammunition, emergency medicine, two-way radios where everybody's already practiced how to talk to each other on the radios. You've got mutual defense with neighbors. You've got early warning systems in place. You've got guard dogs, everything. That's where you want to be. If you are on the road, you've made a horrible mistake, and your chances of survival go down quite drastically. But if you're fixed in place, then you have a very good chance of making it through this, as long as you have enough people to have a coordinated defense against raiders or looters. And there also may be some local governments that attempt to go insane and insert power, like in the state of Washington or the state of Oregon or California. And you're going to have to be able to defend yourself against terrorist government groups that are also looters. And they're trying to confiscate supplies so they can hand them out to their own people under the cover of claiming government authority. But really, they're just waging another layer of the war against you, the war they've been waging now with the vaccine and with, you know, money printing and the food supply disruptions and all these other things. So understand that you're not going to have very many friends during this time, except family and people that you know, people that are part of your defense. You're not going to be able to trust the government. You're not going to be able to trust other groups of possible raiders or looters or desperate people. And you're certainly not going to want to trust any foreign troops that might come into the United States, like UN, quote, food rescue missions or what have you, you know, humanitarian missions. You're not going to trust them because they're not here on humanitarian missions. They are here to occupy and conquer the United States. As all this is happening, the final note is that there may be regional civil war taking place because there are going to be a lot of people who are resisting all of this and saying, no thanks, we don't want to take part in this. There may be rogue government elements. There may be rogue military elements. It's hard to say. Or even private gangs or drug cartel gangs that rise up and obtain a lot of power in a certain area. You need to be able to navigate that situation, which means you need supplies. You need to have, you need to hide those supplies, and you need to be able to barter or pay off threats as needed so that you can be left alone and survive until some semblance of a lawful society is restored. So those are my notes there for Chapter 5. This is Mike Adams here. I'll have more for you on the next episode. Thank you for watching Brighteon.tv.